Welcome to this deep dive into your family's history. We have got just a really fascinating stack of sources in front of us today.
Yeah, we have old family diaries, military records, and some really great local prairie newspaper accounts.
Right. And our mission today is to explore the, vibrant and honestly slightly chaotic life of Wilfrid Laroe.
Born in 1900 to Moise and Sophie.
Exactly. Right as the world is undergoing these massive technological shifts.
Oh,
Okay,
yeah.
let's unpack this. How does a mere teenager end up acting as his father's trusted chauffeur and like cross-country cattle selling companion?
What's fascinating here is that it wasn't just his proud, daring personality. I mean, though that certainly made him his father's favorite.
Oh, for sure.
It was really about his ability to just adapt to rapid modernization.
Yeah.
Like, Wilfrid was the one brave enough to actually figure out how to drive the family's first automobile.
Which was a massive deal back
A
then.
huge deal. That skill made him completely indispensable. So he would accompany his dad on these big cattle trips to Saskatoon and Winnipeg.
Right, where he quickly learned the fine art of socializing with buyers. And as the family history affectionately puts it, he learned to nibble at the sauce a bit on those business trips.
Yeah, nibble at the sauce. That daring streak meant he was always chasing a thrill, you know. But it also led to some pretty hilarious early misadventures.
Oh, like the taxi incident.
Yes, exactly.
So he's 18, trying to drive a taxi in North Battleford, and he's walking through a dining hall, delivering a suitcase to a patient at the local asylum.
Right.
And suddenly, this female patient drops her mop, points right at him, and just screams that he's the man who stole her suitcase.
He just panicked.
Literally terrified, he dropped the bag, bolted to his car, and sped off without even collecting his fare.
I mean, clearly driving taxis was not meeting his need for adrenaline, which perfectly explains his next big pivot into the Saskatchewan Stampede circuit.
Which brings us to Dewey, his famous Bronco.
Oh, Dewey.
I used to think of Dewey as just a wild animal, but it was really all about his response to the environment. He was like a superhero with a secret identity.
That is a great way to put it.
Right. Like at home, Dewey was so gentle, Wilfrid's son Lloyd could ride him bareback with just a simple neck rein.
But the second you put him in a stampede shoe.
Exactly. That constraint triggered something. He became an absolute holy terror, jumping straight up and coming down with this solid jolt that just knocked the wind right out of his riders.
It's wild. But, you know, that rodeo life had to end eventually.
Well, I have to push back here. Was this wild rodeo lifestyle actually sustainable for a young father? Like, how does a guy whose main qualification is getting crushed by Broncos suddenly become a vital military equipment inspector for the Canadian Army?
Right. How does that leap even happen?
Yeah.
Well, it happens because the rodeo lifestyle had a brutal expiration date. It forced a complete reinvention.
Ah, the 1932 Midstead Stampede.
Exactly. A horse actually fell backward directly on top of him. He had to be pulled out from under the animal by the pickup riders.
Those are the guys on horseback whose specific job is to rescue thrown cowboys,
Right,
right?
exactly.
Yeah.
And the accident left him with a badly broken nose, which gave him his signature Roman look. But it permanently ended his riding days.
Wow. So he had to find another way to survive?
He did. He had to lean into a hidden talent, which was his mechanical skills.
I see. And he wasn't even formally trained. He was basically like a 1930s hardware hacker.
Totally. He and his brother George bought this Twin City gas tractor and a threshing machine and just did custom farm work.
I mean, if you can keep a gas tractor running with baling wire and grit during a freezing prairie winter, military machinery is probably child's play.
Oh, absolutely.
Here's where it gets really interesting. When World War II breaks out, Wilfrid is pushing 40, but that old army itch returns.
Right.
So he auctions off his stuff and actually joins the RCEME, the Royal Canadian Electrical and Mechanical Engineers.
Yeah. And to understand the RCEME, you have to think of them as the Army's ultimate fix-it crew. Their entire job was ensuring tanks and trucks and weapons functioned under extreme conditions.
Which was perfect for his background.
Exactly. Because of his self-taught, hands-on mechanical skills, Wilfrid was sent overseas immediately. He spent 3 years in England, touring the southern part of the country, conducting vital spot inspections on military equipment.
And serving in uniform at the exact same time his son, Lloyd, was deployed in the Navy.
Which is just incredible. If we connect this to the bigger picture, Wilfrid's life serves as a brilliant case study in human adaptability.
Absolutely.
Returning in 1945, he was granted an untouched section of land by the Department of Veterans Affairs, and he proceeded to break and cultivate 600 acres.
600 acres, that is intense.
Yeah, he was a quintessential workaholic. though, as the family notes, he still indulged in being an alcoholic on occasion.
Naturally.
But eventually, he sold the farm to spend his twilight years up in Alberta's Peace River country, staying close to his children.
So, what does this all mean? It means your family history isn't just a list of dates. It's a blueprint for resilience. From cowboy to mechanic to soldier to pioneer farmer, Wilfrid Laurot never let a changing world leave him behind.
You really didn't. He just kept adapting.
Which leaves you with this to think about. If Wilfrid were born today, in an era where we rarely work with our hands and everything is digital, where would a daring mechanical mind like his find its new frontier?